this where I can lay my Bible down on the podium. This morning I've got kind of two parts to the sermon. I'm doing a short series, 1 or 2 months, in which we're going to be looking at the law. And so the first part is really an introduction to the new series, where we're going to camp out at Sinai and look some at the law of Moses. And I don't know if it's, 4 weeks or 5 or 6 or 10 weeks, but the next month or two. So the first part is kind of why study the law? Why study the law of Moses? And then the second part is I am going to jump in before the end this morning. I am going to jump in and look at the Ten Commandments. Obviously, the law of Moses is a lot more than the Ten Commandments, but I do want to briefly look at the Ten Commandments this morning. The first question is, why study the law? And there are some passages in the New Testament, and definitely find some in Paul, that seem rather down on the law. He'll make statements, we are not under law, but under grace. He will also later say, though, in the same book of Romans, the law is holy and just and good. I remember Karl Barth. I remember hearing a story about him. I don't remember all the details, but Karl Barth, was questioned about some of his emphasis that he made on certain things, and he said, "You had to understand the battle I was fighting at the time." And I think it's true a lot of times that when you're understanding, arguments, you've got to understand the background and the battle that people were fighting. And when you're looking at passages of Paul or other writers in the New Testament, I think you have to understand the background of first century Judaism and what later develops into rabbinic Judaism and the emphasis that they placed on the law, especially certain aspects of the law. For instance, Jesus will make a statement in Matthew 23. He says, "You tithe mint, dill, and cumin, but have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness." And this is one of the passages that I think a lot of people don't really, but if you can't get the humor out of the passage, you probably don't really grasp it. But he says, you tithe your spices. You get out your spice rack at home, and you measure out 1/10 of all your spices, and you go and give a tithe of all your spices. But you've forgotten about justice and mercy, compassion and faithfulness. And he says you're very rigorous about tithing, but you've forgotten all the big stuff. Or one of the big issues or divisive issues that comes up with Jesus and the Jews having to do with the law is Sabbath keeping. And particularly when he heals on the Sabbath, they get all up in arms because he's helping someone out on Sabbath day. Don't you know it's the Sabbath? You can't work on the Sabbath. You can't do anything on the Sabbath. And they're getting mad at him because he's helping people and doing good on the Sabbath. Or another issue that comes up is that, they constantly criticize Jesus for, why are you hanging around the sinners and the tax collectors? Why are you hanging around the wrong sorts of people, as though the law of God in the Old Testament was devoid of grace and compassion. In the law, they had a whole sacrificial system and a day of atonement and things like that were dealing with the issues. God understood his people were going to sin and fall short. And God is described in the Old Testament as a God slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. And I don't think the law was ever intended as a tool to look down on other people. Now, you do have in the New Testament, Jesus tells a parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Of course, they used it as a tool to look down on other people. It was never intended as a tool to look down upon other people. It was supposed to help us become more like God, not to look down on others. But there were issues in the law that were emphasized heavily in the first century, things like circumcision and Sabbath keeping and food laws. And when Jesus complains about the scribes and the Pharisees, he never complains Because they're spending too much time helping out widows and orphans. That doesn't come up. There's a lot about how you treat widows and orphans in the law. Like often happens, first century rabbis spent a lot of time focusing, I would say, on some of the wrong things, or focusing too much time on the wrong things. And I'm glad that never happens today. Obviously some of you sense my sarcasm. I mean, I think this has been going on not just for the Jews. I think this has gone on throughout church history. I mean, there's two ways Satan can deal with people to keep them away from God. One way he can do it is he can keep them from being pious. Keep people from thinking about God at all. People who aren't interested in church, aren't interested in spiritual things. If Satan does that, that aren't interested in piety and religion and things like that, that's one way of keeping people away from God. The other thing that Satan can do, on the other hand, is if people are religious, if they are pious, Satan can get them to focus on the wrong things. You know, get them all wrapped up in things that really aren't that important and really aren't what Christianity is meant to be about. I think that Satan has got an awfully lot of Christians in the last 2,000 years of the church, you know, wrapped up on things that really aren't central to what Christianity is about. And I'm not just talking about Roman Catholics in the Middle Ages, and there was definitely some of that. And I'm not just talking about Baptists and the Methodists, but it can happen in our fellowship as well. I mean, it's a thing, it's a human issue that we can get wrapped up sometimes in things that really aren't central to Christianity. And so anyway, over the next few weeks, I want to spend some time talking about biblical ethics, and that's really where I'm going. It's really more about ethics than about the law. But I really don't know any better place to start from a biblical perspective than to start with the law of God given by his prophet Moses during the time Israel spent at Mount Sinai. Later on, I definitely want to look at the Sermon on the Mount. I want to look at 1 Corinthians 13. You can go back in the Old Testament and you can definitely look at the prophets, the messages of the prophets. You can look at the wisdom literature, what we sometimes call the wisdom literature, books like Proverbs, that absolutely is full of ethics when it's talking about how to live. And so there's other passages we can go to. But for me, it's really hard to begin anywhere else but the law that God gave to the people after they left Egypt, after he delivered them out of Egypt, but before they entered the Promised Land. I'm not necessarily going to end with the law, but I do think that's the place to begin. Read a moment ago from Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who doesn't follow the counsel of the wicked, but relies on the law of God, and on his law meditates day and night. Or I think of Psalm 19, where it talks about the law is sweeter than honey, the drippings of a honeycomb. And in ancient Israel, they didn't have Walmart or HEB. They don't go to the grocery store and buy, sugar in a 4 or 5 pound bag. You don't, just add sugar to everything you eat like you do today. I mean, the sweetest thing around was honey. And the psalmist says that the law of God is sweeter than honey, the drippings of a honeycomb. And I wish we had more perspective of that kind of thing about the law today. I don't think we often view it that way today. But I don't think it's the psalmist in the Old Testament that's wrong. I think we're the ones that are wrong if we don't see it that way, that the law is good. Paul says the law is righteous and holy and good. And I would say the laws of God are actually a blessing. And I think if we don't see it that way, we don't really understand the law. And I hope in the next few weeks, I hope you come to see that there's a lot of really good stuff in the law. But we'll go ahead and start this morning. Again, the law doesn't end here, Exodus 20, but it begins with the Ten Commandments. The most famous part of the law is the Ten Commandments. And so I want to quickly go through some of those this morning. It could be translated the Ten Words, but I'm going with the Ten Commandments. That's the way it's normally known as. But the first commandment, have no other gods before me. And if Yahweh is really the one true God, then we really shouldn't have any other gods before him. If God created the heavens and the earth, then it's really not a good thing to worship false gods or anyone or anything else other than the one true God. We live in a society today that's very open-minded, and I mean, people can have whatever religious beliefs they want to have, and obviously we're a democracy, and people can have whatever religious beliefs you want to have, but some of those religious beliefs can be true, and some of those religious beliefs can be false, and if there is one true God who created the heaven and the earth, then it is in our best interest to give honor and allegiance to him. And they knew there was one true God. They had just been brought out of Egypt. They had been brought through, you know, they had been brought through the Nile, and they had been brought to Sinai. They had seen God deliver them from the hands of Pharaoh. And God says, don't put any other gods ahead of me. Have no other gods before me was given to us not because it's good for God, but rather because it is good for us. We need to learn to pay honor and homage to the one true God who created this universe we live in, the one who brought his people out of Egypt, the one who sent his son, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He gives us this law because we need it. It is important for us in our own lives to learn to honor him. Goes on to say, you shall not make an idol yourself. And idolatry in the form of making an idol of gods we bow down to is not as common today as it was, you know, 2,500 years ago, 3,000 years ago, the time, and a little bit more even, the time of Moses. But it is kind of interesting. The most holy place in Israel was, in the Old Testament temple, was the mercy seat, which the mercy seat, if you see the design and things of a mercy seat, was really an empty throne. So you had inside the temple, you had a place, you know, you had your holy place, and then you had the most holy place, sometimes called the Holy of Holies. You had the Holy of Holies, and inside the Holy of Holies, which the high priest only went one time of year and things, you had the Ark of the Covenant, you know, with the Ten Commandments in it. And on top of the Ark of the Covenant, you had the mercy seat, and you have this mercy seat, which, like I said, is really an empty throne. And that's the most holy place inside the temple, inside of Israel. And the reason it's an empty throne is because you cannot make an image that represents the God who created the universe. And the God that we worship and serve, part of this is the God we worship and serve is not part of the physical universe. He is the one that created the physical universe. You know, if you go out in the night sky and you see the sun and the moon and the stars, you know, and it, you know, when all the street lights are off and things like that, and you see the star, you know, the sky filled with stars. Or if you go and you go up, you know, next to the Grand Canyon and you look down at the vastness and the immensity of the Grand Canyon, you know, things like that are about as close as you can get to understand the majesty and the power and the splendor of God. You certainly cannot represent his majesty and splendor with any sort of image. Third command says you don't use God's name in vain. And I think in the Old Testament, the first thing that came to people's minds of what that meant is if you make an oath to God, you better keep it. You don't take that oath lightly. If you make an oath to the Lord, you keep that oath. I think what it means to most people today is you don't use God or you don't use Jesus as some sort of curse word, you know, and things. And I think both of those things are pretty bad. But it's really like the first command, you know, that says, have no other gods before me. It's basically saying, take God seriously and hold him and even the very thought of him in the highest esteem. You take God seriously, you respect his name. And again, I don't think this is for his sake that we learn to do this. I think it is for our sake. Yes, God deserves our worship and honor. But if we don't worship and honor and revere God, it's not going to diminish his greatness and glory. Rather, it is going to diminish us. Our lives will get off track if we don't honor and respect our Creator. It's kind of like the fifth commandment about honoring your father and mother, but I'll come back to that in a few minutes. The Sabbath day, fourth commandment, was the day of rest, and I do think, and I do think you see this in the Gospels, I do think the Jews took this too far. It became more about, you know, not working and could get into judgment of other people and everything else. Are you doing what is lawful to do on the Sabbath and things like that? But there was something good. There was a day of rest. And it wasn't just a day of rest for you. It was a day of rest for your servants, a day of rest for your animals, a time for family, a time to meditate on God and his teachings. And I think we probably miss out on the meaning of Sabbath if we sit in front of the TV all day. About a third of our days is spent sleeping. You know, some people have thought, well, how much could I get done if I didn't have to spend, you know, 7 or 8 hours sleeping a day? You know, it could, you know, sleep takes out a good, I mean, roughly a third of our day is dedicated to sleep, to rest, for renewal, to get ready for the next day. Recently I was reading about health, and it summed up, you know, health in three things. One is nutrition, one is exercise, and the third one was sleep, getting adequate rest. And so three parts of a healthy lifestyle, one of those three parts is getting a good night's sleep. Well, where I'm going is the Sabbath is kind of the equivalent of sleep while we're awake. It is rest, but it is stopping and resting one day during our waking hours. The Sabbath is not a day to work on 100 other things that we can't get to when we're normally working, but it's a day to stop. It was a day to recenter your life, to think about why we are here, to think about what is this all about. And I think sometimes, well, I think probably about once a week, human beings probably need that. Commandment 5, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land that your Lord your God is giving you. And the Apostle Paul will say this is the first commandment with a promise. You know, honor your father and mother. He doesn't stop to just say honor your father and mother. Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land your Lord your God has given you. I said a little bit earlier, I think there's some parallels between that and the first and third commandment. I think the fact that God says, have no other gods before me and to respect my name, is he's doing that for our good and not for his good. Certainly not his good alone. I think it's the same honor your father and mother because you know, our most parents want what's best for their children. They have the best interest of their children at heart. Most, you know, most parents don't want to see their teenage children get pregnant or get someone else pregnant. They don't want you to get caught up in addiction or drugs. they realize that there are some things that you can do when you are young that can really mess up your life or make your life a whole lot harder. Things that, you know, you might can recover from, but will make your life a lot more challenging. And most parents have some wisdom, and the idea is let them steer you in the right direction. You know, I've said to one of my children a few times that, and, you know, maybe it's something I don't need to, or shouldn't say, or maybe it's not best to say, but I said, you know, no one cares about you more than me and your mother. And I mean, someday someone will. They may get married. They may fall in love and things like that. But you know, as of right now, you know, you can have friends. You can have other people. But I guarantee you there's no one that cares about you and loves you more than me and your mother. And I, you know, I really think that is true. You know, maybe it's not the best thing to say, but we really want what is best for our kids. We want them to have long, successful, and meaningful lives. We really want what's best for them. We may be off track sometimes. We may not always give the best advice. I'm not saying that. But we really do want what is best for them. We may get mad at them. We may yell at them. We may worry about them. But we do care for them. And I think, it goes back to, you know, honor your father and mother so that your life may go well in the land you're living. That if you listen to your parents, you're going to be better off because they really do have your best interest at heart and want what's best for you. And I think this is true of parents. I think this is true of God. And why the first and third commandments are so important is because we are better off when it starts with honoring God. And if we honor God and we put Him first, then it's going to put everything else in our life on the right track. Thou shalt not murder. Obviously common sense. I don't know. You know, there's different views on ethics. There's definitely some different views on ethics in society today of the ethics that I have. You know, some of the ethics I believe in. I think almost every society believes that murder is wrong. I mean, I find very few people out there that say, okay, well, murder's okay. You know, it's okay to kill people if you don't, you know, if they get on your bad side, you know. And I'm actually, you know, and it comes from, I believe, from the Bible, I'm actually pro-death penalty. And the reason I'm pro-death penalty is because I do believe that human life is valuable, and that seems backwards to some people. It doesn't. I think people who don't respect other people's lives, they kind of sacrifice their right to live. Violent crime and murder is a terrible thing. You know, again, I don't like seeing people put to death, but the reason I'm for the death penalty is because I respect human life. And people who don't have basic respect of human life, it's going to cause problems in society, and you almost have to get rid of that. The reason that the death penalty is in the Bible, and you can go back to earlier in Genesis, is because of the very fact that human life is sacred. Thou shalt not commit adultery. About every year, or it's probably multiple times a year, and I have clients come talk to me. Of course, they're dealing with finances and taxes or something, but you know, they're getting a divorce. Either one spouse will come to me, I'm getting a divorce, they're wondering how this is going to affect them or what they need to do for next year or something. Of course, I don't pry into the details. They're not coming to me as a minister. They're coming to me as a tax preparer. But I wonder, and I see, you know, this young married couple with two little kids, and I find out they're getting divorced, and there's a part of me that wants to say, are you sure? You know, don't, you know, I'm thinking, don't do this. You know, it's not good. Adultery destroys a lot of lives. Yet, adultery and divorce has become very commonplace in America. I hate divorce. I hate adultery. I think one of the biggest lies that exists in our country today is the lie that says that divorce is okay. It may be under certain circumstances, it may be the lesser of two evils. There may be a time that things are so bad and, you know, because of adultery or violence or something else, but broken families is an epidemic in our culture today that I believe has had a profound impact on so many lives in culture. And everybody says, well, the kids will be okay. The kids will live through it. Yeah, they'll live through it. I mean, God said, do not eat of the tree of the, you know, of the knowledge of good or evil, or you shall surely die. And Satan says, well, they'll not, you know, you won't really die. Of course, the next thing you know, they're cast out of the garden. They're barred from the tree of life. They're no longer able to partake of the tree of life. Yeah, it doesn't kill the kids. It just has an effect on their whole childhood. Don't steal. There's an idea out there in our society today that property rights are an evil of Western civilization. Now, I believe in giving, but I don't believe that anybody has a right to steal. You know, maybe as a Christian, and I think as a Christian, if we see someone in need, we should give up some of our own property and give to them. And there will be laws that we'll see in the law of Moses about this too. But I never have a right to steal. And I have begged before in my life. I remember when I lost a job in Belton and things like that, I reached out to a few people for help, but we never have a right to steal. I remember when I was going to Valencia Community College in Orlando, and I took a speech class, and I was, you know, nervous, public speaking, but there was a young woman in the class who gave a speech about her sister and her brother-in-law. They had been missionaries to Zaire. The country Zaire is no longer called Zaire. It's the Democratic Republic of Congo. But I don't remember the whole speech. I remember something had happened. Her sister and her brother-in-law had to leave. They came back to the States in a hurry. They left their house unlocked. And when they came back, they found spoiled food. And I wanted to say in the refrigerator. It may not have been a refrigerator. It may have been like the cupboard or something. But they found spoiled food inside the house. They left the house. The house was unlocked. I mean, the first thing is they felt bad. They're thinking, we should have get, there's people here. Poor people, people in poverty and hunger, we could have given that food away before we left. They felt bad. But the other thing, they were impressed. Because this is a very poor country. I mean, much like you think of Ethiopia and some of the pictures you see there. I mean, it's poor. People are literally starving. People are outside the door. The house is left unlocked. No one goes into the house and no one takes their food because Zaire believed in ethics. They believed you don't steal. They believed that you respect people's property. Same thing, my grandparents grew up. They were poor. They struggled to feed their children. Most of the time that my uncles were going to school, they only had one shirt to wear to school. My grandmother would wash their shirt and get it ready every night so that they'd have their clean shirt, their one good school shirt, to go to school the next morning. And they believed, you don't steal. There's a movie, I like the movie, and I will admit it's about a boxer. It's called The Cinderella Man. It's set during the Great Depression. But if you're ever going to watch a movie about boxing, and I actually hate to admit, I like Rocky too. But anyway, if you're going to watch a movie about boxing, watch The Cinderella Man. But it's set during during the Great Depression, and you know it starts out before the collapse, before the Great Depression. But during the Great Depression, it shows scenes that they literally don't have food, and the parents are skipping meals so that their kids have a little bit to eat. And one of the sons in the movie ends up stealing some meat from the local butcher. And I mean, the family is literally just about starving. You know what the dad does? He has the son take the meat back, give it back to the butcher, and apologize for stealing the meat. That you know, it's not, nothing justifies the right to steal. And there's been a lot of people in a lot of societies that have struggled to put food on the table. And I can sympathize with people, you know, trying to survive. But there is no justification for stealing. We should give and help out the poor and those in need and use our property to help others, but we never have a justification to steal. Don't give false testimony. And this does have to do with truth telling. Of course, it's not saying don't lie. It says don't bear false witness. It really also has to do with being fair and impartial. And we talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago, talked about the impartial judgment of God or the fair judgment of God. But you don't favor the rich over the poor when it comes to giving witness. You don't give false witness, you tell the truth. You don't favor a friend over a foe. If someone who's a friend of yours or a family member of yours does something bad to someone else and you're called to witness, you tell the truth. You're honest. You practice impartiality. You treat people fairly. And the last one, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. And I was thinking about, well, what's the opposite of this? Be grateful for the house that you have. Be grateful for your spouse, or if you don't have a spouse, be thankful, you know, for the life that you have. Be thankful for whatever possessions you do have. You know, appreciate what you have. Now you can, you know, if you don't have a wife, you can try to find a wife, or if you, you know, if you don't have many livestock or animals, you can, you know, try to earn and get some livestock or something like that. But I think some of it, you know, the opposite of covetousness is really learning contentment and peace with what God blesses us with. And we can work for more. We can go out there and do hard work and try to get a little bit more. But to, you know, not envy others. Because envy is a dead end. You can always want more. But we'll look at more in the weeks to come. I hope that you'll see as we go through these next few weeks that there's a lot of good teaching in the law of God. And I call it the law of God instead of the law of Moses. Moses is the prophet who delivers the law of God. But it's God's law that he's given to the people to instruct them how to live in the land that the Lord their God has given them. If anyone needs to come this morning for any reason, we invite you to come while together we stand and we sing.